Thank you very much for joining us for this episode of FAS Conversations, or Conversations with an FAS Expert. I clearly do not have a title for this series of episodes, but I do have a guest, and this guest is a good friend of mine, Roshan D'Souza. It's a pleasure to have you today with me, and I look forward to learning a little bit more about your journey to an FAS position, kind of your experience as an FAS, and for our audience who are considering a career in FAS from different stages of their life, whether they're grad students or have been working in as postdocs or for a while in the industry and looking for something else or looking for the next step. This would be a good conversation. I think you have an interesting story to tell with your specific experience. Everybody has, you know, their journey to an FAS role. And personally, I think having been in FAS for over 3 years and now transition into sales career, I feel FAS is a tremendous opportunity for anybody who's looking to either break into a biotech industry or secure a really great position in the biotech industry. So I look forward to learning more about you, Roshan. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Pavel.
Well, I would like to first get started, and for our audience to maybe to know a little bit more about you and your journey to an FAS. So you're a senior field application scientist at Telesis Bio, and certainly you've been in FAS for several years now. But your story, you know, as far as from undergraduate to graduate school and then after that has been pretty long, especially for, you know, as compared to mine, for example. I kind of jumped into an application science role more or less right after I graduated. You took, if not a detour, then certainly a different path. So I'm curious to learn a little bit more about your trajectory. And when you were an undergrad or graduate student, did you even know what field application scientist is?
No. So first, I would like to say, like, thank you for setting this up. And I do see your LinkedIn post about how important FAS role is. And this is one of the most, I'd say one of the least explored career. So when I started, I would say you are lucky. Not everyone's as lucky as you who got to transition into FAS role. I spent, at least after my PhD, I spent 8 years on the bench. So again, I lived in Korea for 9 years. I did my PhD there. And after PhD, in Korea, I didn't even know what FAS role was. So I used to see this sales rep or FAS come with all the night well-dressed folks with suits and everything. And they used to come there. And I'm like, I might have to get this role. But I was in Korea those days and communication was a key. I had to know Korean, and my Korean was not up to, I could communicate, but not up to that level where I could talk science in Korean. So, but then I spent almost like after PhD, I spent like five, seven years I spent there. And then I moved on to, I loved doing science. I loved doing bench work. And then I published papers. All I was doing publishing papers. And I worked on NGS, antimicrobial resistance. Then I moved to Greg Venter Institute, and I spent 3 years. It was one of the best places I worked in Greg Venter Institute. They were working on human, they were big into genomics and next generation sequencing. I was working on a phage, bacteriophage engineering. It was a DOD project. And spent almost 3 years out there. But then I realized I need to do something different. And then again, I would say I was not very passionate about writing grants or papers and stuff. I did write paper. And after that, I'm like, I love talking to people. And maybe you should make this as your career, basically. I wouldn't say I was a great communicator, but I loved talking to people. And then, yeah, if you think about grammar, my grammar is not good. But if you can communicate, that's more than enough. That's where I was in that place. I'm like, I love talking to people. And I thought I should explore this field. And then I got a position in LGC Biosearch. The company is based in Alexandria, Minnesota. So I went there. I spent almost 2.5 years. After that, I moved to Telesis Bio. So it's been almost more than 3 years I've been with I've been in FAS, and it's a wonderful journey.
It's interesting to hear that it took you a little while to get to the point where you became an FAS. You had a you know, a career as a scientist across, you know, as your postdoc, then research as a wrap, essentially, right? And then move to a staff scientist position at Craig Venter. And of course, that's kind of a classic example of, you know, some scientists take a long time to figure out what they want and what's their next step. But what was the moment when you said, like, this is just not it anymore? I don't think I can do another, I can lift another pipette and just do another experiment. Because FAS is very much about communication and less about doing the science itself. So what was your sort of defining moment? And how did FAS kind of come onto your radar at that point?
I thought I would say there was a point where I recognized myself as a more of a technician than a scientist to come up with your own ideas, your own grants. So I always believed if you're a scientist, you need to have your own ideas. You need to come up with your own ideas and grants. But then I reached that phase that, no, I need to do something different. I've been on science, but one way I think about it, all this experience I learned, I gained being on bench for almost 7-8 years, that helped me moved into FAS role. Because now when I look at these positions, I have the basic knowledge, or the technical knowledge which is needed for FAS position. But I spent my time, and I'm like, again, for me as an immigrant, and I came on H-1B here, and then it's not very easy, especially if I'm talking about anyone want to transition within US. If you had the same situation like me 5 years ago, I've given lots of interviews, and I used to talk to people, and like, oh, you have a good your CV looks good. Do you need sponsorship? I'm like, yes, and then like, boom.
Yeah,
that's where it used to happen. But then that took me a long time. One of the reasons it took me a long time to move into a FAS career, again, from academia to industry, it does take. That was one of hurdle I had to pass through. Yeah, again, as I realized, I'm like, I need to do something valuable where I can really help people. And I've wrote paper and it was a basic science research. But I'm like, no, I love talking to people. I need to be on the field, talk to people and help them in real time. So that was a time
it's interesting you say that, like the helping of people. As scientists, we typically, you know, even though we kind of can extrapolate that our inventions or experiments may have a real world application, we're oftentimes kind of secluded in our own lab in the middle of an experiment, and you don't get that immediacy of somebody saying thank you for what you do. Is that something that kind of like you really felt like you needed some kind of satisfaction or more or less instant gratification? Because that certainly was for me. Like, I felt like I'm not, you know, getting
absolutely enough. So coming from the lab, my boss, Dr. Young, back in Korea, you must have heard NDM1, which is a beta-lactamase, which was found in UK. But my boss was in UK those days. He's from Korea. He was in UK and he found that. And it has like almost 10,000 citations. NDM1 is New Delhi Metallo-beta-lactamase. Everyone heard about it. And he discovered that. And I worked under him. And then I was all into like, oh, I want to find out one of the superbug. And I found one of the oxa carbapenemase, oxa 499. I was super thrilled about it. And I really thought, okay, this is going to be, this is one of the, I found this novel beta-lactamase. And I published in AAC, and it took me like, I think after 3 years, I switched back and I saw the site. I looked back at the citation. It had only 4 or 5 citations. I'm like, okay. So this is one of the reasons I'm like, whatever I thought, this is not going. I'm like, it didn't make me, it felt like, was it really useful? The amount of energy I spent finding out, was it really useful?
Yeah.
And I wanted, like, it was helpful. I don't know. I wasn't seeing itself like being applied instantly and everything. So that's the reason I decided, no, I need to move out into. I mean, I love traveling. One of the things is, I felt I was handling like 4 or 5 experiment in one day. I was just between 4 walls, and I wanted to travel. I wanted to meet people, and that is one of the reasons I explored.
Yeah, that's a good point that you bring up. So field application scientists, people should certainly remember that there is a word field in that title, which implies being out there, not just in the office. And that's certainly what attracted me to some extent to that position. But I'm curious, there is another similar position in biotech field that's more on a pharma side, which has a similar, similar job description to some extent, yet it's very different. And personally, I struggled a little bit when I was exploring my options between those two. That is medical science liaisons versus field application scientists. So those are two somewhat similar positions, but they're actually quite distinct. I'm curious if that position has been on your radar and whether or not you were sort of debating between the two at all.
I did look into it, but again, I may not be completely right in how I'm describing this role. Basically, I feel they are very, very similar roles. But I think if you have to be a MSL, I feel you need to be a clinically, I looked into a jobs, which are all as the term medical, you need to be clinically very strong. I felt like, especially mm-hmm. I did look up some of the position, which were in oncology and hematology and these fields, MSLs are needed out in this field, especially in oncology. And I don't have much basics for that. So yeah. I feel you have a good basics. If you have done a lot of cancer research and clinical mm-hmm. research, I think that's an awesome career to look for, basically. And mm-hmm. yeah, again, I did look into it, but I felt my credentials, my background was not well suited for MSL role.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And that's sort of exactly how I felt as well, because my background is in protein production and characterization. So it was not even though the proteins kind of had something to do with cancer, but also not really, at least within the context of my world and my research. So I didn't feel like I had the credentials, as you said, to go for something like that. And I was kind of more interested in the technology aspect, which is kind of where application scientists are more suited for, right? Those is where your products and services of the company you represent are some kind of hardware, instrumentation, or maybe software, some kind of analytics package, and so on. So being a bench scientist, you kind of, you don't want to do science after a while, right? You want to do something else. There's, field application scientist is one career option. There's also many others. So let's put sort of travel aside for a second. There's marketing, which is kind of communication, but maybe a little bit different. There is full-blown sales, of which FAS is kind of a part of, especially in biotech world. So what was your thought process, why FAS is the right next step versus some of the other sort of adjacent areas of biotech, which can sort of have their own pros and cons?
I did look into a sales position, but then I was somehow... I feel FAS role comes with, you carry the science with you.
Yes.
You carry the science with you always. Wherever you go, you carry the science with you. That's something, that's what I loved it, loved being an FAS. You carry the science, you preach the science, you help people. And I did understand about, that's what all my, I don't know. I felt like I was not a good salesman before I moved into it.
Yes.
But then I realized... FAS is a balance between being a technical plus sales position. So that's what I wanted to learn. And eventually I might move into sales role as well, but I feel like I've been already doing the sales role.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I feel like FAS is a more safer position for me because I come from technical background. I will still have that knowledge, and sales is something I will explore. So over past 3 years, I met really awesome people in sales and how they do the sales position and everything. So overall, I think this is something I was always thinking about being a sales. Now I think after 3 years, I could say something. Sell which customer needs. Don't worry if a company is making profit due to sale. And don't say, I've seen some, don't oversell things. For the moment, for the temporary, we may sell, we've sold 100 million, we made 100,000 and you'll be happy. But in after 2 years, they may not want to look at your face. Instead, just make a small sale, which customer really needs. Let's say you just made 10,000, but then customer really needs it. And then he'll be and you build your trust. You think the FAS understood my problem. And yeah. He sold me this. The sales understood. And overall, that builds a trust and that goes for a long term. I feel indirectly that benefits the company. These are the things, I realized in my career. Again, sorry, I kind of drifted a little bit. But no, I would say FAS is something, again, I had the technical background. I want to be very safe than jumping into sales. So that's one of the role. And marketing, I don't think I had a... good experience in that. So I felt being technical, going into technical is a better role for me.
So I'm glad you brought it up. So I understand that, you know, going into FAS feels like it's a, if not like fully like safe transition, but it's certainly more comfortable than just like full-blown sales or full-blown marketing. And I want to juxtapose that with sort of the following question. Now, what was the most surprising thing when you became an FAS that you're like, I think it's going to be kind of right up my alley, yet there was this one thing I just didn't expect to do? Like, was there something that sticks out in your first FAS role that you just like kind of, whether positive or negative, but, you know, what was like sort of the most surprising thing about that particular position?
Even though you're technical, be ready to say, I don't know. I was like, I felt miserable initially when I started. So my career started with my first experience was one of the most toughest customer.
Yes.
Most toughest customer. And I'm like, what did I do to myself? I remember writing an email and sending it to my my colleague back in Minnesota. Can you please check my email? Is this polite enough? That's where my first email to the customer.
Yeah, you want to double check that. It's all about that sort of communication style.
Yeah, communications. I was like, oh my God. I'm like, it was the toughest customer. And I thought, oh, I have technical skill. I can deal with it. No. You, even though you have technical skill and end of a day, I'm like, oh, how do I deal with it? But somehow I navigated through. It's like, I realized don't take anything personally. And I was new there. So there was no way that she was angry at me, what I was doing. So it was, there are some things which were their needs were not met. And it was not anything about, I realized it's not, they're not being personal. So I told them, I really don't know the answer about it, but I'll be your FAS. I'll be your point of contact. I'll help you through it. That's what I told. And that calmed her down. And I made sure every 3 days, even though I didn't know anything, I'm looking for the solution, I'll get back to you. And that is the one which brought her down. She's one of the good customers. I mean, that customer is still a good friend of me. So basically, that's one of the things.
That's amazing.
Again, you will know that the best shocking thing is like, even though you have technical background, but you be ready to say, no, I don't know about it.
Yeah, that's so important. Sort of coming back to your earlier point about integrity and kind of humility. You got to know when, you got to maintain that level of, you know, integrity and say like, yeah, this is not something I can answer right now, but let me take a look at that and really know how to navigate that situation where customer may expect the sort of immediate feedback on their question. But you, if you maybe are just getting started, especially, it's okay to say no, but it's important to kind of to follow up on that and really build that relationship. And customers do genuinely value that. I can certainly attest to that as well. It's been over and over again where when first like 30 to 90 days, you're just getting started. There's so much to know about the technology that you're now going to be representing. You will never become an expert right away. So it's important to navigate that, you know, with that kind of intention in mind that it's okay to not know, but it's important to follow up. Now, to just expand on that a little bit, what do you think about the technical aptitude the candidate, FAS candidate needs to have to be, you know, to land a job in a certain company? I mean, we can certainly discuss your process of getting the first position, you know, in more detail, but I'm curious just at a high level, do you think it's important to know the technology, like be very versed in the technology of the company that you're applying for?
Yes and no. I would say yes, you need to know because you need to break into your FAS career. It's very, very difficult if you don't have a background. Again, if you can ace the interview, convince the hiring manager, convince the panel that without knowing the technology, you can get in. So maybe that's the time you would know how technology. You need to have the technology to in order to get the role. I would say no because if you understand any, I mean, we can learn as a PhD or a master if you come. If you have interest, if you know how things work, if you have the basics or a background about it, you can definitely go ahead and learn. So, and it's not like, it does help. Technically, being technically strong, it really helps. But I would say how willing you are to help customer, how willing you are to learn and help and navigate through. No customers, whenever you give a call, no customer expects you to know, oh, this is the answer, just right away, do it and solve. No one expects that. So they are human as well. They'll be like, oh, no, take your time. So I trust you. So get back to me after a week or 4 days. So that's how it is. So it's kind of, but I would say I would be a little bit worried now if I to have to become an FAS in oncology because I don't know anything about it. And it may take me like 6 months to 1 year to study about it. But if I have to study about NGS or synthetic biology, microbiology, and also proteins, I have a basics about it. It does make my job easy, I would say. It makes my job easy, but it's not difficult.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect answer. And I kind of agree, especially having done two FAS positions. The first, I kind of heavily relied, I was a user of the technology before I got the position. So that certainly was a great foot in the door. And that certainly goes a long way to break into that role for the very first time. But the second position, I wasn't very versed in the techniques. Maybe done just something similar, but once. And then the second position, I had to really rely on the other aspects, which is me being able to learn new things very quickly. And then obviously some of the experience in communicating that and be a customer advocate. So from your standpoint, the first position at LGC, how did you get that FAS position? Did you have the necessary background already? Or like, what was the thing that really helped you the most to get that position?
It's quite funny you ask because this is a very interesting story. Sometimes you think in life that I wasted my years of my young years doing something totally irrelevant. I shouldn't have done that. But then when you think back, I felt like nothing is useless in life. It does teach you something. So basically, after 3 years, I wanted to move into a FAS role. I've been applying right and left. I can't even, I've lost count how many I've applied. I was just applying and I've that's because I wanted to move into industry side. So I was applying everywhere and then LGC Biosearch and Becky. So she one of the awesome manager I had and I'm still in touch with her. So Becky reached out. She's like, oh, thank you for applying. Would you like to, I'd like to speak to you and everything. So it was about high throughput sequence screening. It was a bioautomation, ag genomics. You can see it's an entirely different field. I didn't know anything about bioautomation, but I had a little bit basics about PCR, qPCR. I mean, every scientist would have knowledge on PCR, yeah. qPCR. But again, you need to sell. You are better at PCR. How will you sell you are better at PCR? Because everyone knows PCR. So, but it was a bioautomation, high throughput screening. And then the only I was... Luckily, my application was picked up because I kind of leveraged my background because I from India, I lived in Korea and I moved to US. So I just tried to prove that I've been in so many. That was, I think, one of the strengths I could say. I've lived in many places without knowing knowledge. I went to Korea and I learned the language and culture, food, everything. So that was one of the strengths. Other thing is, I worked in call center back in India right after I finished my undergrad. I worked in a call center. The shift, it used to start at evening 7 and morning 5 or 6, it used to get over. Wow. And I used to help American customers. So I was helping internet troubleshooting. This is a company called SPCGlobal.net. So it was my client. So customers who cannot get to connected to internet and DSL, broadband was new those days.
Wow.
We just switched from modem, the dial-up to broadband those days in 2005. And then I used to get calls and I used to help them. And it was a graveyard shift. I decided, no, I need to go back to studies. And I did my master's, PhD and everything. So I was just telling them.
Oh, what a great story, by the way, already.
And then it seems I got the position and everything. I was just thinking because my boss and my colleagues told out of 260 applications, they picked my application. I was pretty surprised. Wow, that's an achievement. I was just asking them, how did you pick my application? And the reason they said was not because of your technology, not because of your paper or skill. We think that if you can survive and you can go through all American, like whatever experience with Americans, if you can sail through that 1 year with all American rudeness and everything, you will definitely make it in your life. And we need this guy.
that's amazing. Wow, what a great story. That's
I was always telling my friends, like, oh, I wasted my 1 year being in call center, but no, the FAS role, actually I got this role because of that. that position.
That's such an interesting story. And there's a great learning point there, which I totally subscribe to, that nothing happens without a reason. And a lot of things reveal themselves years later. Like the classic kind of sort of similar story to that is my first FAS role I got because I had some experience with the technology, but that technology that I used wasn't in my PhD. It was like actually before that. It was during undergrad for 3 months. I had a short internship. I used the instruments and I was like, okay, that was the end of it. And I didn't touch them, didn't do anything. And then 4 years later, I was able to get the job in a company that sold those instruments. So you never know. And the other point I really wanted to just double down on, especially for international students, of which I was one, and certainly you were as well. It's very, that experience of living and working in different countries, it's such an asset because it demonstrates your resilience. And frankly, that what gives, you know, international students, international candidates, sort of a leg up over somebody who is like just, you know, from a town in America, because they've only lived there their entire life. They can't really leverage the same sort of, you know, skill set of communicating across different like language barriers or you know, cultural barriers and so on. We get that. We understand what it's like. We've been on that side. And frankly, a lot of scientists are also international, you know, students or scholars. So it also helps you as a candidate to demonstrate that you can, you know, maybe meet somebody who is also from India or who is from Russia or from other countries. And that is certainly something to demonstrate and to really showcase whenever you apply. So I'm glad you brought it up because I completely, you know, I've kind of forgot about that, but that's an extremely important point as well. So, and maybe during that interview process, certainly there may have been some, you know, you mentioned that they basically said like, if you can do this, you can be a great FAS. But what was there some kind of hesitations on their part in terms of some of the things that didn't quite fit the bill? I know you mentioned technology aspects. It was some part of that. And I kind of, can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think there was an hesitation because it was a bioautomation company. It was a technology which I haven't really tried before, but it's again, I did my little bit of research. It's like you just try to see how you fit in, basically, how you fit in. It's not really difficult. So that's where I tried to, before going for the interview, I tried to see how you fit in there. And they asked me, do you have any engineering background? Do you know how to? Like, no, but I love fixing things. Mm-hmm. And then again, it's Midwest. And then you talk about like, oh, I have a van which is like 200,000 miles old, and I work on it, and they get impressed. It's like, okay, if this guy has works, it's like you understand the field and you understand the crowd, what they are, and it's like pretty much. And it's not about lying. Genuinely, I have a van which is 251,000 miles, and I work on it. So I did love fixing things. I did love, like I have two kids, and they just coming, all the broken toys are just thrown at me, and I like fixing things. So that's why I said, no, I don't have an engineering background. So that's one of, I don't know if that was an hesitation, but their main thing was how willing you are to learn. I said, I love to learn. I love to fix things and everything. And, more of a thing is just, I showed them I'm willing to learn, basically, whatever it is. I'm willing to learn. I'm open to learn. And I've never felt that, oh, this is not my job. Never make them realize that's not my job. So everything is my job. I represent this company. It's mostly like, this is not my field, because I've been in FAS and I've done engineering stuff. And there are some time I've picked up an instrument and I put it in my car and I drove around. So I've done everything. So,
That's again, very going important.
Going back, yeah. Going back to that, There was a hesitation, but I was being honest and I showed I can learn, basically. Mm-hmm. So
that's very important point to demonstrate, like that willingness to learn, because field application scientists, you know, one of the crucial aspects, you know, when we talk about communication skills that are extremely important, what we really mean by that, if we were to expand on that, is really the ability to learn something about the customer. Because it is a sales job, but it's also a troubleshooting job. Kind of, there's both sides to that. You got to learn how to understand what the customer is doing, whether or not the technology is a fit. Or on a troubleshooting side, you got to want to learn what's going on to better troubleshoot it, right? That's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is the thing. Willingness to learn and how... And I never... it was like I never lied on anything, but I was just being very honest. And there were some questions were thrown at me and I said, I'm really sorry. I have no idea what it is. So it's like some of they asked, oh, do you know about human genomics? Have you worked on... Can you talk about your experience on human genetics or human genome sequencing? I said, there is nothing to talk about because I have done nothing.
And yet you still managed to get it, you know, to get the job. It's very important.
Yeah, it's just that I was being very honest, but I said, if I read the paper, I might have to start from Wikipedia, but I'll learn it. So that's where I was, and that's how I got it.
That candidness is extremely important. I remember when you were interviewing at Alice's Bio, I was fortunate to actually speak to you, and you mentioned something similar now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah, you're like, I don't know this, but I will learn. I bet you, you know, I bet I will. So, and I was like, this guy, for sure, like, he's very honest, and it's extremely important to maintain that integrity, because that's what builds that trust with customers, which is extremely important. Now, you became an FAS, again, as we mentioned, after kind of a long journey from the grad school. Now, certainly, again, what I was saying earlier, that wasn't a journey for me. But to you, kind of, it's fair to ask questions, because people may want to change jobs, you know, a lot later in life, potentially, right? For different reasons. Now, would you say, is it even a true statement to say it's too late for person X to become an FAS? I mean, certainly, I don't think it was the case for you, but what would you say to somebody who is maybe hesitant to transition to an FAS after being a staff scientist or after being a postdoc in several different places for a long time?
Say, if you really want to be an FAS, this is the right time. This is the right time. It's like your question is like, how do they make up their mind to move a FAS position, right?
Yeah, it's sort of how to overcome the hesitation that this is the right choice for them, especially if they've been doing something for a very long time. They could be kind of fed up as well, but they're kind of still not sure to whether or not they want to take that leap of faith.
I think a little bit of internal reflection, what do you want? So pretty much, what do you want? Just think about how many years, what has happened in your life. So basically, like, yeah, if you're truly interested in academia, if you really want to write grants, if you want to become a professor, if you have it in you, it's good for you. But I think I realized over the year, it's like eight years, I realized I don't have it in me. I loved science. I was getting excited. I got these results and everything. But as I realized, I just thought about what after 10 years after now? Actually, I could picture myself just being a staff scientist even after 10 years.
Yeah,
because I didn't have that what it takes to be a professor, because I need to write a grant and everything. But I just picturized myself after 15 years, I just picturized myself just to be a staff scientist. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. But again, overall, we need to all want, everyone wants to like to grow in their field. And I realized, okay, I'm just going to be in this field. I'm just going to be this experiment, going to do experiment. Mm-hmm. What do I need to do? So that is the time I decided I need to move into a FAS position. But again, as I said previously, I love to talk to people. I'd like to travel. These are the things. And I'd love to meet new people and be among the people. I'm like, okay, no, I think this is a time I need to. Mm-hmm. That was my break. I need to look for a FAS position.
That's such a perfect answer. Now, between industry and academia, kind of obviously since you made that transition, and a lot of scientists ultimately have to make that this leap of faith. I certainly had done that as well. I mean, what do you think is different from the mindset? Like, what do you need to be aware of when you're transitioning from, let's say, more academic lifestyle, if you will, to an industry lifestyle? What are some of the things in your mindset that you need to change? You know, first thing that come to mind is something to do with business. Do you need business skills to thrive in biotech world?
Business skills, I think, I don't think it's 100%. You see, if you're starting as an FAS, I would say don't think about business. Don't think about you need to save the company.
Yeah.
You don't have to save the company. You'd have to save yourself. You have to learn.
Yes.
But probably down the line, maybe 2 years, 3 years, once you get, once you understand the business, maybe that's the time. But the main difference with academia is like, probably you think about, you need to impress your PI, or you need to really do, you need to get the results, because you're pretty much on a funding. Even it's in, if you're working on industry postdoc or industry scientist, you have this funding, you're on to discover something like a product, you need to write a paper or anything. And that's pretty much here. But as an FAS, one thing we should always realize, we are carrying the company. It's a brand name, either it's LGC Biosearch or it's Telesis Bio. You are carrying the company with you. So you are always representing a company. So one thing I've realized in my experience, one thing as an FAS, you'll be happy because customers like, you'll be the face of the company there. Customers very happy. You will be the first one to know you're awesome. Your company is awesome. Your technology is awesome. I've been struggling for past 1 month, but this worked. It's just because of you, just because of your company. But also there is other side is actually if customer gets angry, he just throws things at you. So yeah, exactly. Be ready to face it. So that's one of a thing. I mean, I would realize being in as an FAS position, you carry the company along with you. So you're a face of the company and you need to show that. And again, as I said, like understand the company, what customer needs, because most like a translational, right? You need to help people. You need to really deliver what you know. Mm-hmm. So business, again, I would say eventually we will learn like how to earn the business and everything. But I would say like, do your job.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I kind of, I agree with you there. That's why I'm such a big fan of this particular career choice that people can make, because especially if you're not sure whether or not you have the business chops, here's the answer. You don't need to worry about it just yet. It's a perfect kind of transitional career track where you're still very much carrying the science, and then you can pick up skills along the way. Nobody is expecting you to sell things, to adhere to a quota. That doesn't happen. Now you're part of the organization that ultimately is involved in doing that, but that's not your responsibility, or at the very least you're sharing it with a trained sales professional, and you do that hand in hand, and we really are there to support. And that's why it's been a really great transition, I think, for you, Roshan, as well. Now, something it's important to bring up, especially, you know, coming off of 2023, and a lot of scientists who are in academia are very hesitant to jump into the biotech industry, and that is the funding, its insecurities, layoffs. Certainly, very few companies have been immune to, you know, trials and tribulations, especially last year and also early this year as well. So what do you think is the right answer to somebody who is hesitating because of that, especially maybe also if they have family and kids obligations? Is biotech technology industry still fundamentally, you know, something to consider as a good choice? And how does FAS career specifically fit into that in the context of sort of this insecurity that some companies may face when the market conditions are very turbulent?
I would say FAS, if you're scared about it, I would say FAS is one of the most stable positions I have seen. Because again, if a company, if the sales is really doing well, they'll think, oh, we don't need sales because we have enough brand value. Let's just take it off the sales team.
Yep.
So they may take it. Or if there is a good product and they think, oh, we are sustaining this product for another 100 years, 200 years, this product is going to be good and there are no competitors, they may take off the scientists or R&D team here. Marketing. But in FAS, always needed. If company goes to a bad phase or a good phase, because there need to be a person who kind of like takes the message between back and forth, like customers facing this difficulty, the feedback, he's giving the feedback. You need to channelize through. You need to tell the R&D team, marketing team and everything, your leadership is doing that. And the leadership says, hey, we are introducing a new kit. We are doing some changes. We are doing this, some new offers. You need to channelize. You need to like pass the message. So you're a bridge between customer and your company. And then as far as I have seen, FAS roles are one of the least affected roles. So that's why I feel confident, because again, I'm not a, I've taken enough risks in my life. I've been in like, I've just overnight, I packed my bag and let's go to Korea. And then, hey, let's go to US. And I've been like that. And I'm very impulsive. I borrowed money from my friend. I bought a car where I didn't know how to drive properly. So I've taken enough risks. But now I have two kids and I have to think about it. That scares me as well, to be honest. I'm worried about stability. That's something which is top priority for me. But along the lines, I feel if you are thinking about FAS role, it's one of the safest position because that's the least affected.
Yeah.
You will be there in the company. No matter other teams might be like get laid off, you'll be there in the company. That's what I can say.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's been my experience as well. And I'll add to that sort of one of the more practical reasons why FAS is also very stable is because it takes a long time to train an application scientist to be really good at their job, to make them an expert in the technology. And then also in parallel to that, they are establishing those deep connections with the clients. And they are typically also one of the first people that the clients interact with. So it's a double-edged sword from the safety standpoint in a good way, because you just invested so much time and resources into those professionals, and now they also established themselves as the face of the company to your customers. So you also can't afford to, you just basically can't afford to fire them, especially even if the times are hard. There's many other auxiliary, and I shouldn't say auxiliary, but there's many other roles in the company that will be most likely on a chopping block. And that's obviously unfortunate. But for people who are considering what careers are out there that are most secure in the biotech industry, FAS, certainly for me, and I think for you, Roshan, come at the top of the mind.
Yep.
Right. So one of the last questions I have for you, and that's you got the position of FAS. And now, for people who are in the process of in the grind of applying, as you have, as I have, to those positions, trying to look up ahead and imagine themselves in their those shoes as a FAS professional, what is a day in a life? What do they have to look forward to? And sort of maybe some of the skills they may want to practice up in the process of applying. Like, what is something that can really help them on day one or day 100? And what are some of the great things about being an FAS in your daily life?
So is it great thing about being an FAS, or what are the, before being an FAS?
I think it's really the day in the life of FAS. What are some of the highlights of things that you get to do? So people can have a mental image of what they can look forward to, but also recognize what is it that they may need to, brush up on, like maybe some of the communication skills or whatever they need to ultimately make that reality of becoming an FAS.
it is something, of course it helps if you are good at communication. That's something brushing up that would help. So again, it depends upon what background you are, I would say. Like if you are an NGS, if you are like bench doing an NGS sequencing, if you are doing synthetic biology, and if you want to be an FAS, I would say the first thing being an FAS, it may be a little bit difficult to break into it because that's unfair. I completely understand, because every FAS job lists that previous FAS experience, and that's where and you are competing between another 200 FAS with people with FAS experience or 100 FASs. So it's unfair, but the thing is, I would say don't give up. All I've said, because I have applied, I don't think so anyone have, I can't, you'll be shocked. I don't even want to say how many jobs I had applied before getting an FAS role. You'd be really surprised, but I had that enough patience because I took a challenge. No, I'm going to get through this. I spent at least an hour every day to apply for the FAS position. And again, these are the things I would say. I'm not getting that right word actually. It's Toastmaster. Brilliant thing to get in. So I speak fast as an Indian. So we speak I think 3 times more faster than Americans. So that's something. And then being a Toastmaster is a good way to in order to enhance your speaking skills. And you don't have to be perfect in grammars, but that helps you to how to talk to people and how to understand and all those things. And then every day in FAS, being in FAS is like, I would say, you get calls, either like you get to travel, you have customers, you don't have to like bury yourself like months to they get understanding things, like you know what is their issue. And it's depending upon customers. Like my day starts with, oh, are you having that issue? You'd like to come on site. So I go on site, and I live in Boston area. Luckily, thank God, I don't have to drive at morning peak hours and come back at 5 o'clock. So I'll make sure all my meetings are after 10 o'clock and before 3 o'clock so that I can avoid that. One of the best perks of being in FAS, you don't have to travel in traffic. It's less. You have very flexibility. Yeah. That's the first thing that comes being in FAS. There is a flexibility. There's always a flexibility because company trusts you. You can do whatever. I mean, it's up to you to carry that responsibility and deliver. And there is always a flexibility how you plan your day. Yeah. So which doesn't come being on a bench. You have to be on that specific time you have to go out.
Yeah. I love that example, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I think I just wanted to really emphasize that flexibility, by the way, is, you know, comes with its own sort of challenges, if you will, where you have to manage your time very wisely. But at the same time, it still allows you to, you know, potentially have time for your family, for your personal time, better than just being tied to a lab when you have to maybe run into the lab on a Saturday to take care of your cells or whatever else that you need to do as a scientist. So that's something that people can really look forward to as an FAS. And at that interaction, if you crave interactions with other people, that's another something that I would just add, is if you come to a point where you don't get enough enjoyment out of doing the science, yet you get more enjoyment of talking about science, that's something else you will get a lot more of as an FAS. And that's something to really look forward to. I certainly looked forward to that myself, just because I wasn't very good at some of the experiments. I was very burnt and experienced lots of failures. So talking about science and not experiencing some of the failures myself and just helping others solve those problems is one of the things I look forward to the most of being in an FAS.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Roshan. I really appreciate your insights today. It's been an honor to learn more about your process of becoming an FAS and your experience, you know, excelling at this role. I mean, this is exciting time to join biotech industry. And any last words from you to aspiring FAS professionals?
Keep trying. Don't give up. I'd say I know it is difficult, but I don't think so. It was as difficult as how much time it took me to get that role. And if you need help, please reach out to any FASs. And I don't think so. As far as I know, FASs are usually people's. They're like... they're very friendly because of we have interaction. And if we are not friendly, I don't think so. This wouldn't be a right job for you. Mm-hmm. I think, say, 99%, and most FASs are really friendly. So if you have doubts, reach out to any FASs. Or if you are applying for some position, let's say you have some bigger company, there is a position, you can reach out to their FAS and say, I'm trying to get this position. Do you help me? Most of the time, FASs are willing to help you, because they understand the pain and they would like to talk to you and everything. So interaction. That's how. Keep trying. Keep applying. Just go. I mean, it's all about building network. And that's where I think you can break in. And this is an amazing, amazing field. I mean, yeah, food and also travel. And if you love staying in hotels.
So. Yeah, I can attest to that. Yeah.
I'm not saying you don't have a personal life. I have two kids and I have enough personal life. I mean, I'm happy with this role. Yeah. And thank you, Pavel. It was really a pleasure talking to you. And I hope, and again, I said, I really appreciate you taking this topic, not well explored role, but I hope we'll have more and more FASs in future.
Thank you. Thank you very much. If you like this video, like and subscribe and leave a comment with your favorite questions that I can ask to our next guest. And thank you so much for joining us. I'll see you next time.